If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need to do more with less, Upwork helps you hire fast without the overhead. Find expert freelancers in design, marketing, IT, AI, and more. Never tried Upwork? Now's the perfect time. Spend your first $1,000 and get $200 in credit for your next project. No upfront costs. No long-term commitments. Just $200 to reinvest in what matters. Go to Upwork.com/save to get started. That's UPWORK.com/SAVE. Upwork.com/save.
Rewind the dynamite from the post wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
It is Wei Ting and John Pollock here on Rewind to Dynamite. Welcome one, welcome all. Wei and I are warmed up. We just went through a half hour of news regarding everything from a positive update on Ben Askren, a negative update on John Jones and what's going on with him, injuries to Chad Gable, update from Kevin Owens, WWE Unreal that Wei is very much looking forward to at the end of July. We'll get a five-episode dump coming up in a month's time. And New Japan matches and the apple of every wrestling fan's eye at the moment, CMLL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With a frustrating streaming service, but nonetheless, a product that is in demand.
If people want to watch it, they will find ways to watch it, yes. Thank you, John. I saw just a quick plug here for tomorrow in the Post Wrestling Cafe. I will be joined by Nate Milton, Chris from LA, to talk about WWF Full Metal, the album. John, wow. Have you listened? How many times have you listened to Full Metal?
I'm trying to remember. I think I had the cassette of Full Metal, the album, when I was a kid, I think. So I would have heard this, but
I guess this was how many wrestling albums had you purchased?
Zero. This would have been the first one I had ever seen in a
Now, was
store.
This a novel idea for you? Wow, I get to have wrestling themes on a cassette.
It was actually my brother that bought this, not me. I never found the I enjoyed the mid-80s albums, when you would have the wrestlers that would do songs, I found that to be pretty fun. But when it was just the themes, I mean, it's, I guess, like, we didn't have the internet at this point, so this was your only way to hear these themes. But quite frankly, there weren't too many of these songs that I was ever saying, man, I wish I could listen to The Undertaker's theme on my Walkman. I'm trying to remember what was on this. I always loved Sid's theme. Sid was a favorite of mine.
They got some bangers on this one.
Yeah.
It's Undertaker. I mean, it's the new generation. So it's Bret. It's Shawn.
When did this come out? Like 95, 96-ish?
I should really know this. But yes, like Thorn in Your Eye is, I guess, the lead track. So I would say around like 96, 97, maybe.
Okay. Well, that's going to be coming up on Rewind Away. Also dropping on Friday. Because we have Collision on Thursday night, so Kate and John Cena will be coming at you a day early with Collision Course. That will be up at postwrestlingcafe.com. And then we go into the weekend. Saturday, Wei and I will go live right after Night of Champions for a review of that show. Sunday, I will be chatting with Jack Wannon about UFC 317 as International Fight Week concludes. And they've also got the UFC Hall of Fame on Thursday night as well.
Don't forget the return of MCU later coming out on Friday, with Rich and WH coming back, talking about three episodes of Ironheart that just dropped on Disney Plus. So looking forward to hearing from those guys.
Are you watching any television programming?
Last night, I actually had a chance at like 4 a.m. In the middle of like rocking my baby to sleep. I got to watch one episode of Ironheart, quite enjoyed it. So if I have time, I might catch up on the rest.
I also want to mention that today on Pollock and Thurston, we were joined by Kareem Zidane, really Always a lot of great insight from Kareem Zidane about kind of the real world issues that tend to trickle into combat sports. And he's probably the best person at covering that intersection. He was on the show with us talking about the Night of Champions, the promotion, how they have utilized CM Punk going into this with, you know, the, you know, his aversion in the past about Saudi Arabia, and also, you know, the influence of Turki Alsheikh when it comes to TKO boxing, and just the overall like move that WWE has made towards these site fees, and that Saudi Arabia was, you know, it was not an outlier. It was more so the blueprint that they were forming all those years ago. And it has become in many ways just baked into the WWE schedule. But this week, I think with all of the uncertainty in the Middle East, it did give you that thought of like, the, you know, these are still shows that do come under scrutiny by some in many ways. And there's also like a safety component too, for people that on Monday, like before people knew of like the ceasefire, like what are we going into this weekend? I mean, it appears that things will be okay, but nonetheless, it's one of the many discussion points that are always attached to these cards overseas in Saudi Arabia. On to Dynamite, we are heading, where for the second time this week, they were in Kent, Washington, with a final number from WrestleTix of 2,370. And Toni Storm arrived at the show. Never were able to find out what she had arrived at the show for, because she was attacked by Mercedes Moné and is sent into the arena portion. Mercedes beats her down, calling her a stupid little bitch, applying the statement maker, and then the officials are trying to separate her. Mina Shirakawa is out, and Mercedes proclaims, "Let the games begin."
Yeah, which is what Tony said on Saturday.
Correct. So we have, just an angle between the two for to continue this on. And Yeah. I think overall this program's in pretty good shape. I thought, we didn't talk about it Monday, I thought Tony's promo on Saturday was just tremendous.
Oh my God. Yeah. Honestly, every appearance she's had, especially as a babyface during this run, has just been a home run. And, you know, these two, I think just the marquee value is so strong between the two. It's not like you have to do even a ton. And I would almost suggest that, almost like, if you did too much, if you overwrote this ankle, it might even ruin it a little bit. But I'm also talking about Toni Storm, where like kind of overwriting is, it just kind of works for her. So I'm curious to see like in these few weeks what more they can do, but they don't really have to do a whole lot more. This is already feeling like a top tier, you know, co-headlining match.
I am not some other motherfucker.
How did you get the uncensored version?
It was uncensored on Triller. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Amazing. Cool.
We then go to the Young Bucks on the screen, and they address Swerve and Ospreay, noting they have a tag match in hour two, but it's being moved up to next. And I like this because Ospreay's music plays and they wait and wait, and Ospreay runs out where he's furiously taping up his wrist. His boots are unlaced, and he's also from that busted up nose he got a few weeks ago. My God, this black eye, usually with time, the black eye looks better. It's looking worse each week. This thing looks just grotesque.
Kind of works for him,
doesn't it? I guess. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So did you like this?
It's
too, I didn't, too hokey.
I just like, I haven't really liked much of any sort of like, exercising of the EVP powers, because I find them so inconsistent. I think the Bucks play it so kind of comedically and campy that it's hard to take seriously as a threat anyway. So I'm personally just kind of ready for all of that to end. Like this is the level of threat that we're trying to stop, you know, somebody trying to change the order on the rundown.
Well, this will be the Nick Aldis turn, is when he informs talent, "I've already booked the rest of the show. There's no place for you on SmackDown anymore."
Yeah, okay.
So it is Swerve and Ospreay against Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. And the Young Bucks come out at, you know, just before the commercial break to their music. So Christian and Johnson capitalize on the distraction, and they work over Will Ospreay's arm. Ian Riccoboni then mentions our favorite stat way that Blake Christian is undefeated in singles action in ROH. What he does not mention is that he is 0-6 in singles matches in AEW this year and 0-9 overall.
Yeah.
Is that still impressive? I guess it's like saying like, you know, this major league baseball player. He's
a 300 hitter in the minors.
Yeah.
Like he's batting .167 here.
It's just, I mean, it's better than having no stat, I suppose. So if you're Blake Christian, you're only taking easy matches in Ring of Honor. Like you could lose as much as you want in Dynamite, but as long as you take those easy matches in Ring of Honor, you're still.
Well, this poor guy, the camera like almost completely missed this incredible looking springboard 450 onto Ospreay. Swerve makes the save and he gets tagged in. He lifts up Christian and buckle bombs him into Lee Johnson in the corner. And then we get this closing sequence of a hidden blade to Johnson, Ospreay and Swerve's own version of Chasing the Dragon with the Brainbuster super kick combo, and then a house call and Swerve pins Christian, who else, in 9 minutes and 23 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen,
he's undefeated in ROH singles action, though.
And he's constantly defeated in
he's winless AEW. In AEW.
He's got two streaks going on at the same time.
That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if any wrestler has that. Has
I think they could have done that with Goldberg. He wins on Saturday night but loses on Nitro and Thunder. I think that would have expedited his push.
How would that work in terms of rankings, I guess, if you were to combine the two? Like, you'd be constantly at zero then, right?
Well,
like
Tony has told us many times these are separate companies.
Gotcha.
Can't combine them.
Hey, great match. Like, you know, surprise, surprise, you know, like look at the amount of talents here. You know, like even on what you might consider a jobber team in Blake Christian and Lee Johnson, like they're both so tremendously talented that I think any combination of the two of them with a Swerve and Ospreay is going to be spectacular television. Some great, like cool double team moves from Swerve and Ospreay that I definitely want to see a bit more develop between the two of them.
Swerve and Ospreay try to go after the Young Bucks and they're held back. Swerve is not dealing with the Young Bucks for another year, and he proposes that him and Ospreay do something about it by issuing a challenge at All In Texas. Ospreay then says, "We're going to up the stakes because you're abusing your power, and we want you to put your EVP titles on the line." And the Young Bucks are furious at this notion. And to end it, what other way to get out of this segment than a Swerve stomp to all of the putty patrol on the floor, and they all go down like dominoes as the Bucks flee to the back. And
yeah, logically, there's no way a move like that would create that sort of impact. But boy, does it look cool to see like this explosion, like of flesh from a man jumping onto the pile.
Yes,
great.
Didn't exactly give a real arm twist to the Young Bucks to accept this.
Yeah, that was a part of the logic that I hope they will kind of play with a little bit longer. Like, what exactly are Swerve and Ospreay putting up there? Why would the Bucks agree to
Well,
this?
Maybe they will respond and they will have Swerve and Ospreay put up something in response.
What can they put up? What can Swerve and Ospreay logically put up in exchange for? Because the announcers are saying Swerve and Ospreay could be EVPs as a result of winning this match.
Prince Nana.
Why would the Bucks want Prince Nana?
Well, Swerve has
maybe, maybe his coffee.
Maybe Swerve can no longer associate with Nana, and Ospreay can no longer associate with his Nana. I don't know. They got to come up with something.
Okay. They both have to give up their Nanas.
I'm trying, okay? They got to move tickets, okay? You got to hit that emotional core.
I really do hope they explain it because, yeah, there is no real
They're running out. This match should have been finalized after tonight. Like, we got two more Wednesdays to go until the show. Like, I think this is a match. These four, they should be locked into a match by now. Maybe tomorrow night they will solidify this.
I'm also certainly ready for, like, the Bucks to give up this, like, heel GM EVP role. I don't think I'm ready for Swerve and Ospreay to assume those roles. Like, I don't think that'll turn out well. I don't want this role abolished. I just don't want any sort of like heel GM or wrestler / GM period.
Maybe Kenny will just be left to run the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had an Omega and a Bushi video package, complete with DDT and New Japan footage. So good video package. The Bucks react after the break. They announced that Swerve is suspended for a week for violating the handbook, because everyone knows in AEW, you cannot put your hands on an official.
You put his feet on him.
I thought they'd have to be suspended indefinitely, right? Because that is the precedent, right, that they set with Punk?
Oh, right. Yes.
Okada walks in with the Bucks and introduces the Bucks to his new friends, Rocky Romero, Konosuke Takeshita, and Trent Beretta, people that I'm sure the Bucks know very well. And Matt says, you know, I like you guys. It's Don Callis. It's a prick. But he says, let's remember the goal here, for Okada to beat and hurt Kenny Omega and maybe hurt his golden lover tonight, as Trent vows to destroy Kota. And then it ends with everyone walking off except for Takeshita and Okada, and Takeshita reminding Okada that this is temporary. So This is their big one down the road at some point.
Yeah. I like the courtesy of Konosuke Takeshita speaking to Kazuchika Okada in English, even though there's just nobody else in the room. So Thank you. You know, I like the scene. You know, I guess we had questioned whether or not the Elite was even still a thing. This gave us confirmation that, yes, there is still the Bucks and Okada Association. And now they're a mega family.
The Bucks have just been amalgamized with like the Don Callis family and the Death Riders.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're heel EVPs that they kind of have a hand in everything. It kind of makes sense, right? You know, like through the chaos link between Rocky and Okada, that he would be brought in, and everybody is friends now. So sure, why not?
Do you think that this Okada Takeshita thing is something way down the road? Like, we're going to get Takeshita probably on All In before he goes to the G1. And then he comes back from the G1 and they go right into All Out. I don't know if they do it that early, but that's... No, Forbidden not Door. All Out. Forbidden Door.
I could see this being Forbidden Door. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's possible.
Huge match. Yeah. So now, does it necessitate Okada winning for this match to take place? Beating Omega, I mean.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, you could do something where, you know, it's...
But I think Okada wins.
You think Okada beats Omega?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Well, we go to Kota Ibushi and Trent Beretta, and Ibushi comes out, and Rocky Romero's with Trent, and he's constantly distracting, allowing Trent to attack Ibushi, snaps his neck on the top rope, and then Ibushi comes back firing off these kicks. The kicks looked really good. Hit a Gotch pile driver Trent caught him with a super kick and Gotch pile driver for a two count. And then there's a half and half suplex. Ibushi pops right up, delivers his own to Trent, as they note his past neck issues. And Trent catches him with a crucifix for this excellent near fall. And the key to a great near fall is just that extra microsecond that you just let it hang. And this crowd, they really bit on this. And Ibushi comes off the ropes, lands a V-trigger, and hits the Kamigoye in 7 minutes and 19 seconds. Didn't, like, tear the roof off the place, but from past issues that we've seen with Kota Ibushi over these last few years, this was welcome.
Let's just say back.
A fine television match, and I'd be taking that with Kota right now.
My expectations were Naomichi Marufuji versus Kota Ibushi, which was the last match I saw of him. And I was so pleasantly surprised. You got your friend back. You know what I mean? Like, this felt very much to me like an in-shape Kota Ibushi who, like, kind of had his wits about him and was able to execute everything that he had intended. And just, like, physically, he looks to be back, and for me it was almost heartwarming, because I didn't know if we'd ever see this sort of Kota Ibushi again. You know, like, I guess his true test will be to see if he can, like, pull off, like, maybe, well, next week.
Next week's the test way.
Yeah, against Kazuchika Okada. But this was a great, I think, return match. I thought Trent looked excellent. They told us a stat about how this was Trent's first singles match since May
of 2020. Last year.
Somehow, like, Kota Ibushi has been more active than Trent, at least in a singles match capacity. So He looked tremendous too. He's somebody who he's a day oneer in this company, and I think has just always been looking to break out from this tag team role that he's been in. It's become harder and harder now that the company is so stacked. He just, I think, almost even struggles to just even have any sort of role. But anytime he's on TV, you can tell he works his ass off. He is trying to do his best to get people to notice him, and I certainly did.
Okada walks out, stares down Ibushi, but then he walks off, and Tony Khan books this match in 30 seconds. Okada and Ibushi for Dynamite 300 next week, which is, they have to have, a lengthy match next week. Like, this is going to be a real test for Ibushi. And, Okada, you just don't know what you're going to get with Okada. And it felt like last week with Mark Briscoe, you really get the sense, this guy is... He's peaking for July 12th, not for July 2nd next week on a TV match. But, we will see. Okada, he has his performances and he has his non-performances.
Yeah, and I guess typically on television, it's maybe what you might consider more of a non-performance. This is definitely a dive it back into the deep end for Kota Ibushi. And remember, they didn't mention this in the brief interaction that they had, but this is the match that Kota Ibushi initially injured his shoulder in.
Yes.
So they do have unfinished business, and I imagine they'll be telling that story, at least mentioning it in a video package, I assume.
I almost don't want them to reference it, because if they show a video package of that match, how can you not show the Phoenix Splash? And it feels like that will prompt Ibushi to go for a Phoenix Splash in this match.
I fully expect a Phoenix Splash. Yeah.
Let's not. Me? Let's retire that one.
You know what? I don't think Kota Ibushi is taking it easier. I don't think he knows how to. You saw the way he sold some of those moves from Trent in this match. It had me concerned, he was dumping himself on his head and
I was more worried of Trent taking these things on his neck. This guy's had multiple fusions. These are two guys that probably, those are moves, I don't know. They hit a lot different when you're 43 for Kota Ibushi.
I am very optimistic though. With Ibushi and Okada.
This is the perfect match for where you're going with Okada and Omega, and should be Omega's return next week, I would think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the Movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Moxley does this great promo in a stairwell. He says, all we have is the present moment. Page has it in his hands, but he's just going to let it slip through again. The cowboy is afraid to become what the world wants him to be. Hangman, you make me sick. I have no sympathy for your plight and your crybaby emo crap. A world champion doesn't shy away from responsibility, and Page shies away from the gifts he's been given. So while you're worrying, who's my friend? I'm going to be drilling you in the head with elbows, choking you out. You're going to need to start looking for another job after All In. I thought this promo was just excellent. Okay. John awesome Moxley. Too. John Moxley is like your old school dad, and his teenage son has just told him that he is going for therapy. That's John Moxley's character. He doesn't believe real men keep it all harnessed inside, and then they have a heart attack at a young age.
Oh, that's quite the analogy. I feel like we will look back at this period realizing that we've underappreciated John Moxley in these promos. And I didn't think that was always the case, but because the stench of this overall Death Rider story has been relatively negative, and that's through their own fault and their own booking and just whatever, right? It's kind of clouded us from, I think, all of these John Moxley appearances, and the promo consistency, I think, is still there. Yes, like, I think we're probably still looking for a little bit more clarity about exactly what the aims of the Death Riders are, exactly like what they're trying to, well, what they're just trying to do, period. But I think the quality and the thought put into, like, even a promo like this specifically targeting what Page is and what Page represents, that's different from Moxley, I thought was really strong material.
I would say, like, I've been as much a critic of kind of the why of this whole Death Riders and John Moxley character, but I would say it's almost the most clear in this message with Hangman Page that the consistent message from Moxley has been this younger generation that may have all of these like skills, but they don't know how to capitalize on it and be that world champion that can take on the burden of what this holds. And there's no better character to exemplify that than Hangman, this guy who has all of these self-doubts that Moxley has such a disdain for, that here's this guy who has every gift in the world, and it's himself that doubts himself, that he cannot possibly relate to that. And I think that came through really well in this promo as well.
Do you think it's clicking with the wider audience? Or is it, at this point, is like a Moxley promo just kind of white noise?
I wouldn't say white noise. I think he's...
Like, is that story really clicking for people?
I mean, it is for me, but maybe I'm not speaking for everybody. I think they've made it like fairly clear, like, this is Hangman that is as much battling himself as he is this.
Because I kind of feel like the motivation from the audience to want to see Page win is just so that we could put an end to the Death Rider story, rather than like any sort of deeper, like, you know, achieving of a sort of inner confidence or anything like that.
Do you feel at all that it would have been like if we had gone the other way around and this was Moxley and Ospreay? How would you feel about this going into All In?
In terms
if
of
Ospreay was kind of in the position where you would think this is going to be Ospreay's big win at All In, do you think that Hangman
would also be very good? Yeah. Like, I think both of those guys are extremely capable characters and extremely capable promos. But Page feels like he's more of a sort of vulnerable, like, you know, stronger babyface just a little bit at the moment.
Renee spoke to AR Fox about the momentum that he has been experiencing. It's like, what momentum? And let's go check. You know how many wins this guy has this year?
More than Blake Christian, we could say.
Yes, because Blake Christian has 0 wins in AEW. AR Fox has 2, which is offset by 15 losses and a time limit draw. But he's got this momentum that he's riding.
Maybe simply like getting airtime is considered momentum to Renee.
Well, he's had like 18 matches, so he is getting airtime. That is true. Yeah. He gets interrupted by Ricochet, who says that Fox has everything it takes to be part of his crew and suggests a team up. And before Fox can even answer, Ricochet forces a handshake and
tells him it's a deal and walks off. And AR Fox, I guess, is forced to participate in this tag match. Like, this was binding. This was an oral contract we had on air with a witness in Renee, and they had to team up.
Right. I mean, I thought it was a cute attempt at, like, you know, getting a obviously, like, reluctant babyface to team with a heel in Ricochet. But let's be honest here, like, AR Fox didn't exactly say no. Like, I think he was just looking for permission from the rest of us for him to say yes.
You know what would have made this segment work is if you, Wei, were the agent here, and Renee could have said, you know, AR Fox, there was a long time we weren't seeing you on Dynamite, but everyone knows that television time is the most valuable commodity here. You can never turn down a match, and you've been on a roll of late. And then Ricochet walks in and offers him exactly what has been laid out as that commodity.
Like, I know you're
it would make sense.
Joking,
like, okay, but, you are being featured on the depth of this roster, but everyone is, you're going out, you're getting cheered, and you want to keep that visibility.
Exactly. Like Renee, and all it required was a simple editing of, like, what Renee was about to talk about here, you know, like being constantly featured, I think, is something, despite, you know, losing, like, you should want to try to maintain. And that would put Fox into actual pressure into, you know, wanting to accept this match. He's not booked on the show. Well, Ricochet is giving him an opportunity. It would be more logical that he would accept it, wouldn't it?
Well, they teamed up to take on Jet Speed, and Ricochet warns Fox to listen to him and be smart about this. Fox would be featured in a lot of it. Fox looked very good in this match. Jet Speed would send both to the floor, hit a pair of pescados. Ricochet brought out the Kokeshi onto Kevin Knight and continued to control him. Bailey gets sent into the steps, and then it's Fox with a tope suicida, and Ricochet is in the corner. Fox is crawling toward him, and Ricochet just hops off and won't tag in, leaving Fox to take a sky high and the UFO splash. Kevin Knight pins AR Fox in 9 minutes and 38 seconds. But AR Fox did get TV time and probably will get at least a TV match with Ricochet. Maybe tomorrow night.
You think so? Yeah.
Tomorrow night. The tapings are ongoing for Collision.
I thought a very good match. I mean, as usual in these sort of matches, I think the center of the attention here is rightfully Ricochet, who continues to just be tremendously entertaining playing this cowardly heel. I was, first of all, happy to see AR Fox actually get some sort of storyline. So I was disappointed in realizing that this was probably only a one-night thing with these two, because I actually enjoyed the chemistry between the two. I like Ricochet kind of, like, bossing AR Fox around. And I kind of like AR Fox as this sort of, like, constantly, like, down in the dumps type of, like, you know, veteran who's just looking for his one shot, can't necessarily win, but, like, he's just struggling by and really gets the crowd behind him. Just seems like they're cashing this into a match, and I don't know if they're having much interaction beyond that.
Well, Jet Speed, who got the win, are interviewed by Tony Schiavone and Mike Bailey.
Oh, no.
With great power comes great responsibility. And he says that the AEW tag titles have been held hostage. Kevin Knight says, it's worse than OKC holding the Supersonics hostage for all these years. And this got a pretty good pop. I thought it was even going to be louder. I thought that was a great line from Kevin Knight. And then he starts riffing.
It was very clear who the speaker was.
Well, yes, yes. He was the speaker of the house here, because he just continued. He starts singing MVP's old WWF theme, and then the Hurt Syndicate jumped them. And that's when Jet Speed came to a halt, and they beat the shit out of these guys so much. MJF gets a table, no sponsor on the table. Lashley slams Bailey through Knight on the table. And MVP proceeds to state that if you are able to walk, we'll give you a tag title shot at All In Texas. Now, I understand the Hurt Syndicate are very divisive. I have been higher on a lot of their booking than others, but I mean, this, I just thought
what
at the end
was,
of the,
what was this? What
how
was the point?
How could you possibly want to see this by the end of this? Like, he's just, these two came off like just nothing challengers for the Hurt Syndicate by the end of this. That, man, there's got to be a more clever way to book your monster tag team champions and have some viable challengers, because this is the best you've got in this Jet Speed team in terms of a tag team to that you've built up for a tag title shot. And by the end of this, It's like, God, this feels like a pre-show match.
Yeah, like, I'll be the first to defend, like, I think the Hurt Business are booked the way that they should be. We need a strong heel threat to lead the tag division, and I love that we have that now in AEW. But, man, if you're trying to push a set of babyface challengers for the biggest show of the year, I don't understand what sort of comeuppance Jet Speed could give the Hurt Syndicate to justify this sort of start to the program. Like, something has to be coming that will give Jet Speed the upper hand on the Hurt Syndicate. I have to help in the next
week. Dude, they've got their ass handed to, him to them angle.
But what could it be? I suppose maybe, like, should we be considering the possibility of Jet Speed beating the Hurt Syndicate? And thus, like, you know.
No, I'm going to say this. No. I mean, maybe.
I don't expect it either. Yeah. How about Jet Speed flies a plane into the building and somehow, I don't know.
They fly a jet into Globe Life Field? Yeah, that's possible.
No. I don't know. This was a bit perplexing to me.
Yeah, I just thought this was like horrible handling of Jet Speed. Like, they weren't even the focus of this segment. They just proceed to cut their promo in the ring. Like, they were utter afterthoughts. And MVP hands the mic over to MJF, who is loudly booed, brags about unmasking and defeating Mystico, who he was disqualified against. MVP got in some digs on the Sonics. I mean, until the end of time, everyone is going to try to recreate Kevin Owens and Elias in Seattle, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to do it. MJF announces he is entering a qualifying match next week to get into the Casino Gauntlet, and with that, Mark Briscoe walks out. And Mark Briscoe proceeds to state that Mikey, in reference to Mike Mansoury, had to play my music because Max is going too long and we've got a match to get to. MJF says, I don't give a damn what time is. And unlike Mark, we're actually stars. And he proceeds to insult Briscoe, says, it looks like you're going to do what you do every week, and that's lose. And says, why don't you go back to your ranch and pick up chicken shit, you blue collar bitch. Briscoe comes back and says, I see your inner turmoil, where these hateful comments come from. We know you were bullied, being brought up, and it comes from a place of hurt. So the word of the day is empathy. And this crowd in Kent, Washington starts chanting, empathy, empathy. And they are trying, you are trying, Max, to compensate for something. A place of insufficiency that's been going for 30 years with you having a teeny tiny kosher pickle. And it's no wonder that you'd want to hang out with these guys too. And at this point, if you want to rewatch this, watch Bobby Lashley break at this point, because he thought this was hysterical. The crowd starts chanting kosher pickle, and MVP has to calm down MJF. I have two thoughts, and then I will pass it over to UA. Number one, this was by far the best You've Got a Small Dick promo in wrestling history. Number two, It brought me back to a story I've definitely shared in the past, and you will remember this. Back when I was first going out and doing interviews on site, the Fight Network purchased me a microphone, and it was a boom mic. So I had to carry this long boom mic to...
Like a shotgun mic.
Yes. And so I go to Buffalo for a WWE press conference with this big microphone, and I go to interview Batista, and Batista looks at my microphone and he says, what do you call that thing? Shelton Benjamin?
Oh boy. Oh my.
That was my other thought.
That's rich coming from Batista.
I loved this segment. I did not love the Jet Speed part, but Mark Briscoe was amazing here.
Outstanding. Really outstanding. Like, we know he's in this sort of like perennial position as like just the guy that you beat in order to get to your actual match. But man, they can make some real money with Mark Briscoe and just the very unique personality that he has. Like, he could be their Snoop Dogg, you know, like give me like an AI voice Mark Briscoe that I could just like, you know, type a bunch of funny messages in and then spit it out in Mark Briscoe speak. He's just wildly like man, way more talented, and I think offers way more to this program than even I expected, you know, prior to his debut. He makes every segment work. He got the crowd to chant empathy and kosher pickle in the same promo. Somehow he fit in a message about like mental health in this promo about making fun of MJF's small dick. So he was outstanding, and I don't know, like this. We'll talk about our expectations maybe for both Briscoe and MJF at All In after what they teased here.
Well, after this performance, he followed it with this four-way with Bandido, Roderick Strong, and Konosuke Takeshita. I don't know if you were paying attention through all the commercial breaks, but they had some doozies on this one. With Ian Riccaboni was on commentary with Excalibur and Taz, and during one of the breaks, they got into discussing how many counties there were in Delaware because Taz knew, and somehow this morphed into equal praise for Mike Tenay. This was quite the segue of where they got to with Riccaboni and Taz. So Takeshita would shove Bandido off the top. Briscoe then shoves Takeshita and goes for the froggy bow, misses Roderick. So Roderick gets up. Roderick was excellent in this match. I thought this was one of his better outings we've seen. I mean, all four like had their contributions. So Strong hits an Olympic slam. Then he's doing the running forearms back and forth. And as he gets to one corner, boom, it's Konosuke with a haluva kick. And then follows Takeshita, gets superplexed by Roderick after he recovers. And Bandido and Briscoe come off with simultaneous dives off the top. Briscoe tries to hold on to the rope to prevent the 21-plex. So Takeshita comes from behind and hits a double German to both Briscoe and Bandido. Strong is in to make the save. And then Takeshita hits a blue thunderbomb. Strong kicks out. And the 21-plex is hit to Takeshita, who rolls out to the floor. And Strong lands his flying knee and end of heartache. He's got the match won against Bandido when he's laid on his back, allowing the froggy bow from Mark Briscoe to connect as he comes off the top, snatching the win, pinning Roderick Strong. I thought this was the match of the show. This was an awesome four-way, and you also got a tremendous promo for several minutes beforehand. I love this match. It was a lot of fun, and maybe a semi-surprising win in Mark Briscoe winning, but he's a guy that to some he's slotted, but you watch him in these situations, it's like it wouldn't take it would not be an impossible task to just put him at a, like the audience would be with him if you just suddenly got behind this guy and gave him like a run in a bit higher as well. And I think he'll be one of the like sentimental favorites in this casino gauntlet.
Oh, there's a total like Eddie Kingston, you know, like Mick Foley type of effect with him where he doesn't look like the obvious, you know, sort of top guy. But the moment you want to pull the trigger, the crowd will be there with him. So he does comedy too well, you know what I mean? And so I think like there's probably a desire to want to see him continue to do more of this. But he can obviously get very emotional and can get serious when he needs to. And I think I really do hope the time will come for him. And maybe it'll be this casino gauntlet because he's clearly teasing something with MJF. And after last week, maybe there was a lot of speculation about what MJF's role at All In would be, whether or not the Mystico rematch could potentially take place at All In. I get the sense from watching his contributions on tonight's show that they might be, well, MJF has said that he's going to enter a qualifier for the casino gauntlet.
You could have MJF and Mystico in that gauntlet match. But
it also feels like the story is MJF and Mark Briscoe right now.
Well, you could have, you know, you do not have to just keep things to like one singular direction with MJF either. Mm-hmm. Like you can do multiple things.
But what do you want to leave the match with?
Well, at the end, like, I didn't take this to be like MJF and Mark Briscoe are engaging in this big feud as a result of it. It's like it just gives a story for these two guys to be in the gauntlet together, and there's some reason to care about these two in that match. You know, Mystico's like a thing that they could get, because I would state if you were going to be doing like some kind of mask match with Mystico for Texas, like location wise, that makes a lot of sense, but. Man, I would want to make that pretty known by this point.
After seeing this, I don't think that's happening. I think if we're getting Mystico and MJF, I think Forbidden Door might be the more likely scenario. And I don't even know if like mask versus hair necessarily needs to be there. I I sense it's a bit more Briscoe and MJF just at the moment, because, like, you know, with the cutaway to back to MJF after Briscoe won and everything, it just seems to indicate that to me. Do you think MJF in the Casino Gauntlet is too small of a match for MJF?
It is, but there's also not that program that is set up for him beyond Mystico. And if you're not doing the Mystico match was kind of all you've built this guy up for. So it would have been something cold. So, I mean, at least you do have this story of him still wanting his championship. It makes the Casino Gauntlet feel a lot more important when you have, you know, stars in it. And he's definitely one of those. So,
and just jumping ahead, let's assume Paige wins. MJF winning the gauntlet would also...
Oh, there's a very, sense. You know, having MJF as the winner of this, like, mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably like if you were to ask a month ago, you probably wouldn't have expected this to be MJF's role. But it's not a throwaway match by any stretch either.
Right. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Adam Cole says that the Don Callis family has been a thorn in his side. Don't know about his eye, but in his side. Rewind away, Thursday. And he's issuing an open challenge for Collision. And that is Undisputed. I was thought he was gonna, and that is Paragon.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work as well.
Going Paragon.
Are we expecting a name change back to Undisputed something at some point? Because I don't know how well this Paragon rebranding has worked out for them.
Maybe they'd call it the Undisputed Error. I don't know. This was just nothing. It's going to be Adam Cole and Josh Alexander tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm so uninterested in Adam Cole at the moment. I really am. I'm just looking forward to him being a heel again.
Chris Statlander, Athena, Willow, and Thunder Rosa. They went so quickly to this next match that it made me think that maybe Mike Mansoori was actually trying to get things moving here. Like they rushed to this. All we had in between the matches was this 30-second Adam Cole promo. So it's Willow Nightingale, Athena, Thunder Rosa, and Chris Statlander, and they were having a good match. There were some issues near the end of it, but some of the highlights included Willow and Chris Statlander squaring off and Statlander trying the Babe with the Powerbomb, but couldn't lift Willow. So Athena's in. They note that she has been undefeated in Ring of Honor for nearly 900 days. So that January 5th loss at Wrestle Dynasty
made no sense.
Was one that didn't really yield any results, did it?
Honestly, like her losing to Mercedes didn't really have that much purpose either.
Now that we're here at All In, I mean, it does not feel like Athena's going to have at least a significant role at All In. So Athena, at one point, she calls on Billy Starks to get her title belt, and Athena hits a superplex to Thunder Rosa off the steps, while Willow hits a cannonball to Statlander. Marina Shafir comes down, distracting Willow, as Yuta appears from behind, and Willow avoids an attack from Yuta and pounces Yuta. Further getting closer to our intergender match that I think has to happen at some point. And she turns around after striking Yuta and is hit with a tombstone by Statlander, who wins in 10:48 with the help from the Death Riders. So Chris Statlander will be number one in the Women's Casino Gauntlet. I did think there were some, there was a portion near the end here where it just seemed like Thunder Rosa was just off on a number of like different parts here. But other than that, I mean, the crowd got into this and you had the Death Riders involvement as well, furthering that with Statlander.
They were moving very fast. And so for me, considering that and the amount of stuff that they were able to fit in here, and who knows, like if like they were constricted for a bit more time towards the end, I thought the blemishes were relatively minimal. This to me like represents these four a very healthy mid card in the AEW women's division, and all four of them I thought got some great reactions. And it shows me how ready this division is for more championships. And I never feel like I should be saying that for AEW sometimes. But the tag titles, I think, are at this point pretty overdue, because I think there are, you have enough talent for it.
Would you expect the other participants in both of these four ways to just be slotted into the casino gauntlet for both? So that
I think this is an official announcement. That's
kind of how I took it as well. Like, it's tough with Takeshita. Like, ordinarily, you would maybe think of something else for him, but he's going away for a month after this. So, you know, this is kind of a spot that makes sense.
They have too much talent, man. And it's not a bad thing. It also means Thunder Rosa versus Athena, more than likely a Supercard of Honor thing, if at all, and not All In.
Yeah, yeah. God, they got to put that card together, too, for the Friday. Collision, which is being taped tonight to air tomorrow night. Cole and Alexander for the TNT title. Christian and Nick Wayne against Big Bill and Brian Keith, that was set up on Saturday. Kyle O'Reilly against Kyle Fletcher. Battle of the Kyles. Queen Aminata against Sky Blue. They just randomly, in like the last couple of minutes of the show, mentioned that Templario is going to be on the show, teaming with Brody King against Hechicero and Rocky Romero. And FTR, we're with Big Stoke, and they are going to talk to the Outrunners in the ring.
Yeah.
They're going to have a talk.
Collision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Dynamite 300, besides Okada and Ibushi, they also announced Mercedes Moné against Mina Shirakawa for the TBS title. So two significant matches for next week's show. Hangman and Beast Mortos. This is where we go to a commercial, and Taz starts to wonder how badly Beast Mortos' mask must stink. He's like, I've wrestled guys with masks. Some of them just smell. Ian then asks, and I swear he asks this as seriously as he possibly could, do you think it's a mask, or could it be his face? And Taz is pausing and says, what the hell? Is this what, like, you're teaching in the Bone Zone? And then Ian refers to him being Beast Mortos, and Taz jumps on him. He's a beast. Why don't you get your pronouns right? This was the best interaction of two commentators that you're going to find.
Beast a pronoun?
Well, he's not technically a he. He's an animal. So I don't know. I guess, like, he could still be a gender, but I guess he's not assigning one to Beast Mortos. I guess
gender neutral beast. Okay. All right.
Okay. So I learned a lot here during this commercial break. I will say it was exceptionally quiet during this commercial, and when they came back, like, this was when they announced this, like, late today, I was like, this sounds like a fun match. I don't know if this is, like, your main event that the audience was going to be necessarily as engaged with, but
it's Paige. He's the main character.
Like, it is, but I think sometimes for a main event, I think you do want kind of a,
but also during the commercials, they don't wrestle that hard. Like, yeah, it's sort of,
they're not taking the commercials off, but what they did get into was when Hangman was, like, making his comeback, and that's when this crowd came alive here. He just starts hitting discus lariats. He missed the Orihara moonsault, and Mortos hits the tornillo through the ropes, hits a pop-up Samoan, and then Mortos counters a tombstone, and, dude, he spiked Hangman's head onto the mat.
Can I say something?
Holy Christ.
So they did an injury angle at the end of this. I don't think I want to see Hangman Page wrestle until All In. This man needs to take it easy. He can be bubble wrap Page until All In Texas. He does not need to be doing these moonsaults. Like, he doesn't need to just take any sort of, like, big risk, because there's a lot riding on him. No pun intended. You know, for this big show in July. Like,
it's just time for a face to face, a contract signing, under one roof.
Give me a promo in, like, get back on your Duolingo and give me a promo in just another language. I'd rather you do that than, you know, wrestle another one of these matches. This had me concerned.
This was, it looked like something. Paige then just gets back up, pops up with a Poison Rana, discus lariat, crowd's going nuts, and he hits the buckshot to win in 9 minutes and 50 seconds. Yeah. The lights. Any thoughts on
very
on
good, the match? Very physical match? I thought, you know, as I think is the expectation of an AEW Dynamite main event.
Mortos looked really good. I just don't think he's someone the audience sees in, like, a main event role, but it was, they had a very good match together.
The lights go out. They turn on. Excalibur always confirming we're still on the air. I was very worried. The Bucks have Paige by the wrist. They lay him out with the EVP trigger. And the Death Riders come out. Again, no Claudio. And Moxley chokes out Hangman with a chain until the Ops run down, followed by Ospreay. And they clear the ring of the Death Riders as Hangman was left selling at the end of this. So,
yeah, notably no Swerve. So, you know, there's still he's still unwilling to directly help Hangman. We're still leaving that.
I mean, what more could he have done? Like, what was he going to do here that these four don't have handled? Like, what, I'm going to pat him on the back or something? So,
no, nothing. He could have provided moral support, I guess. Thankfully, Shibata was there. But yeah, this, I'm assuming, will take Paige out for at least a couple days with these sort of chokeout angles.
Yeah, I mean, we've learned that vomiting up blood is at least a 2-week sell. And
but he's got to be on the 300th episode, don't you think?
Hangman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to have the Ricky Saints gimmick where he can't talk, maybe.
I don't know. Can he sign language? Does he have another hidden talent that we'd promo with sign language?
That would be amazing. He strikes me as a guy that might be able to sign. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting. I enjoyed tonight's episode of Dynamite, you know, like it wasn't the sort of like, big special edition type of show that we've had last week, but I thought it was a very satisfying show top to bottom with a lot of like good, like heat building, I would say, at least for a lot of their main programs heading into All In. Everything feels like it's in great shape. And honestly, like they could throw a dart at the wall and with like various members of the roster, and you'll probably end up with a good match, which I felt tonight kind of was. Like up and down, all the matches I thought were of a certain high quality.
Yeah, I think as we fast forward to next week, I mean, we're at the home stretch for All In, and thus far we have 5 matches, 2 of which are gauntlets, which will pretty much get all your loose ends onto the show. Mm-hmm. I just feel that this is still somehow going to be a 15-match card of some sort, and we're just going to get this deluge of announcements for matches that I think you do want to like settle in everything, at least of all your main players, which I guess we're getting to. I would say like the question marks would be like Adam Copeland and also Chris Jericho as well. Like they like Cope's been selling the whole FTR thing, and they're really making no signal toward that. But that's one to look at, and Jericho's kind of just out of the picture, and maybe he's not figured into this.
I don't know if the card would necessarily be any better with either of their additions. Like I think there's enough talent here on this roster that I don't think you necessarily need some of those names. With the exception
let's be honest, with the two of them off, and you know, it has given the show like a feel of like a youthful show. Like we're talking about like who Christian and Lashley as like the oldest players that we're seeing like showcased. Like it's not like it's not just the idea that like, okay, you can't use a Jericho or you can't use a Copeland, but those are main guys that they are going to command a lot of minutes to like that are going to come at the expense of others. And there's definitely been like a shift in the programming and the perception and people that they have risen up that have benefited from those absences.
Yeah. FTR still needs something. I'm assuming the Outrunners isn't going to be their match at All In. That opens a spot for potentially a Cope return, but that might be the only thing, because I don't necessarily think a Jericho being added onto the show is.
You could do Cope and Daniel Garcia, because Garcia is linked with FTR, so there is that potential. I mean, you could.
Yeah,
but I guess by this time next week, I think we should have at least like 3/4 of the card, or at least the direction.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Imagine they did 8 matches.
They'd be some long matches. Well, one of them is Omega Okada, okay? Which
I mean, those top 3 matches should all get like a lot of time.
Storm, Monet, Paige, and Mox, and Okada Omega, like, we can assume to be north of 30. Like,
and now you've got, and the Bucks against Swerve and Ospreay in there as well, like, that mm-hmm. that will probably get your 20 or so as well. I would think 20, 25. Like, I mean, if you fit a lot of people into this gauntlet, this show does not need to have that many matches when so many are figured into the gauntlet, and you want a lot of time for, like, those four matches that we just listed.
The gauntlet should be long, too.
The gauntlets will be long, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, all in.
7-hour extravaganza. 10-hour extravaganza.
That's what everyone's focus. Is it going to bleed into Saturday night's main event? That's the question. Can it start at 3 and go past 8?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. All right. Thanks to everyone for tuning in here on the YouTube channel. Don't you dare leave this YouTube channel without hitting subscribe and liking that video, okay? You better. That's your payment for this grand content that you get. The kind of we don't want to experience any churn. We want to be able to present you with the best content out there.
Premium content, and it must be premium.
Jeez. Goodbye to YouTube, and we will continue on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's data brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.